Welcome to another edition of Haunted Orange County's Paranormal Podcast. I'm Ernie Alonzo, and I'm joined by my trusted co-host, Ramiro Ramirez of NBC's From Beyond, currently airing on Sunday night at 10 p.m. on the Mundo's Network.
Ramiro Ramirez, it's the way you actually pronounce it, Ernie.
But Ramiro Ramirez.
Thanks for having me, Ernie. Thanks for having me again.
Tonight, we have a very special topic that's very close to my heart. It's the dangers of the paranormal and protection against attachments. Let me start off by properly introducing our two lovely guests for this evening on tonight's show, Ms. Catherine Wilson and Marlo Scott. Psychic medium and paranormal investigator Catherine has appeared as a psychic on A&E Storage Wars. She works as a consultant for paranormal teams throughout California, using her skills as a psychic to determine what is haunting a location and why. Time and time again, the information Catherine receives at locations has been backed up with historic research and evidence. Catherine is also a clairvoyant advisor and lecturer who gives readings and mediumship to connect clients to their loved ones who have crossed over. Let me tell you a little bit about our second guest, Marlo Scott. Marlo has the ability to communicate with spirits since she was a very young child. She is an empath and a clairvoyant, which heightens the energy and contact during paranormal investigations. Over the years, she has had success recording Class A EVPs and many, many real-life experiences. Marlo has also been instrumental in helping willing spirits cross over with fellow investigators. Today, as a seasoned investigator, Marlo's take-command style during a paranormal investigation is an exciting and fun opportunity for her to pass on collective years of encounters to those who are interested in furthering their paranormal experiences. Marlo is also the lead investigator or the lead guide for the Haunted Orange County tours and events. Marlo, along with Catherine Wilson, are the newest members to the Haunted Orange County team. It's a pleasure having you both on the show tonight. Welcome.
Thank you, Ernie.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. So we'll go ahead and we'll start off with our first question. Of course, tonight is the topic is dangers of the paranormal and paranormal protection and attachments.
Most of the questions I'm going to ask tonight to Catherine are questions that were lessons to me before I started investigating. It was awesome just to see her theories and her beliefs using a religion. And using a religious approach to investigating, correct?
Yeah, I use my religion. I'm Catholic, and I use that as a protection when I investigate. However, I feel whatever individually empowers each person, if they use that, then they will be protected as well. So it doesn't matter to me whether a person would be Catholic or Jewish or Wiccan, or as long as you use a protection system when you investigate.
So whatever their choice of faith is, that should be suffice to protect them. That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. Okay.
Now, what's funny is I've investigated with the A's a couple of times. I think more with Catherine than with Marlo. And we just investigated a building in L.A., I'd say, 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
And I was just sitting there just intrigued by the work that you guys two have. Amazing. You guys would ask questions, responses are coming in, the energy is just being raised in the building itself. And Ernie later on asked me, "Remember, why weren't you asking any questions?" And I was like, I was a kid at a candy shop, just watching them to work, It's really amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Catherine and I are a real balance when we work together. And I know tonight's topic is about protection. And I always tell Catherine she is my protection. I'm Catholic, but, been away from the church since I was very young. And it's been nice working with Catherine to bring a lot of that back in my work and empowering me to feel when I go in anywhere to investigate that it has brought an extra shield.
An extra level of protection.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Well, it seems like we're an all Catholic panel this evening. Pretty close to it. I had a couple of questions, or actually starting from maybe somebody who's listening tonight who's a novice or somebody who's just getting into paranormal investigating. What are some common mistakes that you see or that you hear of when maybe Catherine, when you help people out who have gotten into paranormal investigating that are new to it, where they can kind of get them several, they can kind of get themselves in trouble from a protection standpoint?
Well, first of all, I think they possibly don't think they need any protection. Okay. That would be probably the number one thing. And then beyond that, they might feel that they're protected, but you have to be consciously aware of protecting yourself the entire time during an investigation. You have to think about it before you get there. Mm-hmm. You have to think about it while you're there, and you have to think about it when you leave. If you don't, then you can run into problems where, you know, people end up with attachments. And I know a lot of people laugh at that, but it does happen. And they end up with somebody at their house that they don't want there. And sometimes they just go away after a couple of weeks. And sometimes they need help to get rid of the spirit.
What's funny is when you say people joke about it, you know, even at Disneyland, when you go out, you know, of the ride, it talks about the hitchhiking ghost, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how they'll follow you home. And not until recently that didn't really ring true for me or ring in my ears until I started hearing about some of the stories of people mm-hmm. who have actually had attachments or things that have followed them home and have wreaked havoc on your life.
That's funny that you bring that up because, as you said in the beginning, when I was a young kid, I'm going to say from what I can remember, the youngest age was probably about 3, mm-hmm. Having ghosts enter into our home. And when I used to go to the Haunted Mansion and I was on that ride, I used to say, "Oh, you're not coming home with me. You're staying right here."
That's cute.
Now, for people who are just getting into it, besides going on the internet and reading about protection, is there anything else where they can get solid guidelines on some things that they need to do before they go into a location?
Well, it does depend on your individual belief system. I believe that it'll work for everybody as long as they're consciously aware of using it and being... never letting their guard down.
Okay.
And I'll still be on an investigation sometimes where somebody will start looking a little funny, and it's not where they're really possessed. It's more of like a walk-in type thing that I think a spirit can do, where they just kind of get a faraway look in their eye, and they're just, the lights are on, but nobody's home type mm-hmm. thing.
Okay.
And you can tell they're spacing out, so... If that does happen when you're investigating, you need to take the person out of the building, talk to them. If it's your choice, pray with them. Because you can get this walk-in situation happen. I've mm-hmm. seen it happen many times, not every time. I've never had it happen to me. It looks uncomfortable.
Okay, so explain a walk-in for people who don't know what that is.
That would be where, like, a spirit's energy actually goes into someone's body, into their space, and kind of halfway takes control of them, not mm-hmm. fully, but just to where they're a little dazed and confused.
Okay. Would they be speaking differently? Have you seen different levels of this?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. I've seen it where the person just looks like they don't know where they are.
Okay.
I've seen it where it got much worse, where they actually passed out.
Wow. Okay. Now, is there anything that somebody can do that will assure that nothing happens or follows them home? Or is there, you never know with this type of stuff, is it?
Well, for me, in my belief system, I pray before I go. I always have holy water with me and my rosary. And I bless myself before I go into the location. I am aware the whole time I'm in the location that there's this space that's probably like, I'd say 6 inches out from my body. And nobody can get in that space.
Okay.
It's energy I push out.
So you kind of envision, it's like the type of protection or bubble around you that
Some do bubble. Mm-hmm. I push energy out.
Okay.
There's different ways. I've heard of a bubble with a mirror on the outside or white light or however you envision it, as long as you can muster it up in your mind to get it to really be strong.
Okay.
You know, and really be effective.
Now, I just wanted to add something. The first time I met you, and going back to what you had mentioned, you know, protecting yourself with some sort of white light. I remember I first met you at the Queen Mary, and you were sitting down in the couch, and that's what I saw around you, a bubble of white light.
Wow.
That's pretty cool. Jinx.
I want to add to that as well. For me, what I do is I call it strong-minded. And when I'm going into an investigation, I'm a very stubborn person as it is, but I go into it, this is my playground. This is my park, and nobody's going to come in and bully me and try to push me out of my playground. And so for me, it's just being, I call it strong-minded. Mm-hmm. And I also do prayer and holy water as well before I go in any place before and after.
Okay. Now, when you're going into these locations, as a team leader, right? Some of you maybe lead investigative teams. Do you recommend people do it that are on your team to do some type of protection, or you just kind of leave them up to whatever, you know?
Everybody pretty much does their own thing. I don't think you can really tell.
Yeah, you can't be responsible for somebody else. Mm-hmm. But you need to also be aware once you are investigating, if you see somebody that doesn't look quite right, you need to ask them if they're okay. And even if they say they are, sometimes we actually escort them outside for a little bit.
Okay. Now, I'm thinking of situations to where maybe you're doing a meetup or you're doing some type of a group with maybe perhaps people who have never been on an investigation before. What would you recommend for people doing those types of events where they have a group of people that, you know, are from all sorts of religions, don't know anything about protection? Would you do some kind of tutorial or something before you start the tour to let them know what things to look out for, what things they might want to do before?
I think, Catherine, I love it when you tell people, for instance, you know, about when you go into a bar and things like that. It's a great way to describe it to them.
Yeah, I try to explain the amount of kind of standoffish energy you need to put forth, mm-hmm. to protect yourself. And a lot of the times I tell women, I suppose it would work for men too, really. It's like, you know, when you go into a bar and there's guys looking at you and you don't want to have anything to do with them, and you kind of walk past them and you kind of have that air out, pushing out that, you know, no, don't talk to me. It's kind of like that.
Okay.
I know it sounds silly, but
it makes sense.
It's that real standoffish. You really need to keep that up.
Okay, so just having that kind of an aura about you when you go into, go into buildings.
Because a lot of the times people will be psychically sensitive and they don't realize it. And they are the ones that can be affected more.
Okay. Now,
and they'll go in really open, mm-hmm. because they want to experience something.
Yeah.
So they're just like all loose, open, and that's how it happens.
So they open themselves up to the point to where they'll because they want to experience something.
They want to get an EVP. They want to get a photo, and they open themselves up so much that they can get affected.
Okay.
Another thing too, and this is what I personally experience, is at the end of the evening, because we can go quite late during these investigations, I'll tend to start to get a little bit tired if we've been in one spot for a little while. And I have to remind myself, like, go out, get a little bit of fresh air, because we were just at this investigation a few weeks ago, and it was at the end of the night. We were down in the basement, and we were talking to a spirit there, and we were talking about whistling. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was getting tired, and I started to lean back and just relax a little bit. And at that moment, I got the highest frequency in my ear, almost as if you could imagine like a dog whistle, if we could hear that, how bad it would hurt our ear. And it just came right up on me in my ear to the point where I just said, ow, so loud. And at that moment, I knew I had to sit up, wake up, and get back together because I was getting a little tired.
So obvious things to make sure that you don't allow yourself to go into these situations would be not going in sleepy or exhausted, right?
Yes.
Not going in intoxicated or
that's the number one thing. Do not do paranormal investigations if you've had anything to drink or any kind of thing that can make you sleepy. I've seen somebody get taken over when they've had Benadryl.
Okay.
Anything sleepy, narcotic, alcohol.
And that I was with her at that time with this Benadryl incident, and she really thought she was fine. It was maybe just the Benadryl, and she wasn't even able to recognize what was going on. And this is a seasoned investigator. And she just thought, well, the Benadryl was making her a little sleepy, a little out of it. And Catherine knew enough to just look at her and take her right out. And the place we were investigating was a pretty intense place as well.
Okay, so the best thing to do in that situation is to take the person out of the of location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she didn't even question it. She says, okay, come with me.
Nice. Catherine, in your dealing with, I know that you've dealt with some other higher level hauntings, and what I mean by that is non-human situations. And that's, you know, going to be part of what we're going to be talking about tonight, because that is a definite danger that sometimes people kind of shrug off or maybe don't want to think about.
Right.
But that's obviously a danger that is definitely there, although probably not the majority of cases. I'm sure that you've encountered some situations like that.
Yeah.
Now, what do you see? Is there any activity that you see people engaging in? I know Ouija boards may be one thing that will cause this activity to manifest.
Yeah, any kind of scrying or use of Ouija board.
Now what is scrying?
Scrying is a practice where you kind of look into a mirror. There's different ways to do it. Rubbing the mirror with different things and calling forth spirits. It's the same thing as using the Ouija board. You don't know who you're going to get coming through.
Mm-hmm. Now, with that being said, this is a question, you know, as an investigator, but I've been asked plenty of times doing ITC, this ITC device, it's a radio, and the people ask, is it compared to a Ouija board?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, isn't it an electronic form of a Ouija board? Right.
You know, in a way it is, I think. You know, I know that's a subject that people argue back and forth about, but it really is, because you don't know who you're getting. You're asking for a specific spirit in a house usually when you're using it. So if you maybe start your session by asking for only good positive energy to come forward and working with it that way, that might help.
So with that being said, even conducting an EVP session would be the same thing as playing with the Ouija board. I mean, as long as you use it as a form of communication, not conjure up something, you know.
Basically, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and another thing, too, we'll say during an investigation when we sit down and begin, especially if we have people who haven't had a lot of experience, we make sure that we state out loud that nothing in this room can touch or harm anybody here. Keep your hands off, and I think that's really important, too, especially when you're working with a newer investigator.
Yeah, I know a lot. I've been on a lot of investigations where somebody in the group has said, touch me, touch anybody you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really believe in that. I don't think they should be touching you, period. But you certainly shouldn't be inviting spirit to touch another person.
So basically, like, not giving permission for anything to be done, right?
Well, I don't think you should invite a spirit to do something to somebody else.
Yeah.
It's like kind of rude, you know? Do they want that? They need to give that permission.
Yeah.
You know, it's up to them individually. I don't channel. I don't want to channel. some people do, mm-hmm. and it works for them.
Yeah.
I know myself, I, you know, speaking about channeling, I always feel, and I think this is maybe important for people who don't understand it, a spirit coming into, it's usually my left side, gets mm-hmm. very tingly. Sometimes I even feel a breeze. And you can actually feel it moving into you. And I just put my hand straight up and say, stop. You do not have my permission. You cannot do this. And I also find, too, if I am in a place and I put my hand on tile or in a doorway, I tend to get a lot of energy. It's like a blueprint left there. And I can feel that and I can get information. But when it starts to get emotional for me and I feel it going deeper, I just take my hand off and just say stop, and I shake it out and say, this is not me, and I just release it. And I never give permission for anything or any emotion to come into me. As soon as I feel myself changing, that's when I pull back and that's when I say stop, because I just don't want it to go any further.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake a lot of people make that are psychic or sensitive, that they let too much emotion. Mm-hmm. You just need to get a little bit of it to get the feeling, to get the right idea. Mm-hmm. You don't need to soak it all in and get to the point where you're crying because the person committed suicide and they're sad and now you're bawling,
experiencing their
right
emotions,
so. Yeah, you can push it back. You can just get a little bit of that,
and that's difficult to do, because when you're right on and you're getting this information, it is a bit exciting. But honestly, that's when I stop, I step back. I can't tell you how many times I've walked out of a room, I've walked out of a building, because I needed to shake it off, I needed to get fresh air, I needed to get strong-minded again and clean, and then choose if I was going to go back in there or not. And that is hard to do when you are getting great information, great evidence. But you have to remember, you know, we don't fully understand this yet, and you do need to stay protected.
Okay.
Now, for those of you that never had the opportunity to investigate with Marlo or Catherine, I have seen Catherine's amazing work as well as Marlo's. Catherine can walk into a location, you know, she refuses to know any information, walks around, does her own walkthrough. In other words, she describes what the walkthrough was, brings up dates, you know, whether the person was a male or female, you know, what they used to wear, what had happened to them, why they're still there. And with this amazing work that you do have, Catherine, you know, I've, as a friend to you, I've always, you know, I describe you as my confidant. I tell Ernie, you know, I ask her, you know, like, you know, when times are really, really tough, you know, even just for fun, I ask you, you know, silly questions, and I know that psychic abilities aren't there to use to your own advantage or whatnot. But for those that, you know, are wondering, what is your theory on ghosts or these spirits actually roam?
I think that there's as many reasons for ghosts to be here as there are different personalities on the earth. I think that there are ghosts here because they were connected to a person, place, or thing that they cannot let go of. I think that they had a traumatic death, some of them. Some of them don't know they're dead. Some of them do not want to move on because perhaps they're afraid of going to be judged and their religious beliefs when they were alive. And when I do meet those spirits, I like to try to work with them to get them to move on, because they're pretty much just wasting their time. I also do think that there is a purgatory type situation where they're needing to work something out spiritually. So I think those spirits are here as well. And I think some are stuck. I think some can come and go.
I, when I was young, about 5 years old, I had these two boys that would come into my room all the time. And when it first started happening, I didn't know the difference between if they were ghosts or real people. But And it's weird. I still remember it like it was yesterday. And I know that these two boys were, they found each other. They were about a year apart in age, probably about 6 and 7. And they would come into my room just for conversation, and they would tell me, well, we just want someone to talk to us. We just want to talk with you. And I used to talk with them, and then I started, as I got a little bit older, months would go by, it started to scare me. And then that's when I started waking up my parents and saying, you know, oh, there's two boys in my room. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my dad would go crazy looking around the house, looking around outside for two boys. But I didn't know enough to explain that they were ghosts. And then as I got older, the spirits that I would come across, they, to me, were spirits who were more lost, spirits that were wanderers and really didn't know maybe how, you know, how to cross over or, you know, what even happened to them in the first place. And I used to feel, I was about 16 years old, and I used to feel so bad for them, and just, I would tell them out loud, there's nothing I can do for you. You know, in the name of Jesus Christ our Lord, please go into the light. Mm-hmm. And they seemed to just drift off from there. But if I didn't say that, I would see them repeatedly, you know, maybe a few nights in a row, or maybe, you know, every couple of weeks. And then once I would speak those words to them, they wouldn't come back.
I think a lot of people don't really have the idea of the type of power they have, maybe just through communicating in a firm way, not maybe wanting a two-way communication, but saying, hey, you don't belong here. I don't want you in my home, or you're not allowed around me, or you're not, you know. is that accurate to say?
Sometimes it takes more than that.
Sometimes
you know. It's kind of like therapy, especially if they're confused, don't want to leave, they're waiting for somebody else to die, and that person's been dead for 50 years and they don't know it.
Mm-hmm.
But they want to stay. And sometimes you have to go back to a location 4 or 5 times and speak with them and talk to them and kind of work them through it, kind of like therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they finally get it, and then they finally go on.
Now, when we talk about protection, what are we protecting ourselves against? Are we protecting ourselves against human spirits as well as maybe something darker? I mean, how much power do these spirits actually have to cause things to happen in our lives?
You don't want anybody to come home with you,
mm-hmm.
whether it's human or non-human. So you want to keep up that level of protection no matter what, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, we do question a lot, children's spirits, you know, are they really stuck? And, you know, that is a very sad subject. And, you know, sometimes you hear investigators who actually feel sorry for these children and invite them to come home with them. And I really don't believe in doing that. I don't think it's that great of idea, because what if something is masking itself, mm-hmm. and you don't really know that it's a child, and you're inviting this unknown? It is all unknown.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? No matter how many years you've investigated, no matter how much evidence you've acquired throughout the years, it's still unknown.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I think you always have to keep that in mind. And like Catherine said, just never, ever invite anything home with you.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that 100%, especially about the child ghosts not being exactly what they seem.
Isn't that true that you, so many times it's a little girl that they talk about, a little girl?
Right.
Yes, we've heard that over and over.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I don't believe in that theory. I've actually captured boys and girls in my time. But the last investigation we had, I captured a little girl, remember?
Yes, and I mean, we've heard it ourselves. And I believe that it is a little girl or a little child. Right? I've even heard a baby cry. I believe that, but do I know it to be certain? No, I don't.
And is it residual or intelligent?
It could be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and being a friend with Catherine, you know, I've learned a lot of my lessons, you know, through, you know, little does she know, she's taught me lessons.
Me as well.
When we're not hanging out or, as I would say, awake in that stage, you know, for some reason I would wake up and be like, I learned a lesson from Catherine, and never really comprehended what it was until I started working with AJ Barrera. You know, he's, I can actually sit here and vouch for his work. I've seen it, I've documented it. of course, everybody else. Every person has their own ability. And Catherine Wilson, the ability that she has is just amazing. I've asked her some, you know, even before I landed this show, I asked her, you know, I was a little nervous and I asked Catherine, what do you see, you know, happening here? And she was like, trust me, Romero, you know, your ears are, you know, your hearing level is amazing and there should be no doubt about it. So I walked in there, you know, with that pride. And like you said, you know, some of these spirits actually need this counseling, and the work that you guys actually do is counseling. It actually helps people and motivates people. And AJ tries to brand it as intuitive counseling.
Yeah, it's, you know, you're helping everybody. You're helping the homeowner. You're helping the spirits, hopefully.
But then little do you guys know that you guys help the people around you guys, because I'm sure you've helped Marlo as a friend, you know, having AJ around as well as having a Catherine Wilson around, you know, somehow would keep me motivated, somehow just keep me up instead of being down. And with that being said, I've heard a theory about how they say psychic mediums or certain psychics go through a near-death experience. And that's when they realize that their abilities are, you know, not increasing, but they're able to actually control their own ability.
Right. Well, I've almost died about 10 times. So I don't know. Like, seriously, Rob, my friend Rob Hansen loves to hear my I almost died stories. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not.
But you've heard of that theory, right? That
yeah.
They say most psychics realize.
You know, I'll tell you, I had an accident where it was Thanksgiving morning, so about a month ago, where I actually fell on my head backwards onto the cement. And I stayed conscious through the whole thing. I went in shock. It was pretty intense. And I had to walk home a few blocks with help from a friend. And as soon as I got in the house, I started to hear voices. Now, being trained as an investigator, you know the difference of a disembodied voice, or if you think, you know, it's a voice that's been carried maybe down the block. And after that, I told Catherine, I said, you know, I think hitting my head really knocked some sense into me, you know, the sixth sense, because it's opened me up even more to experiencing, you know, the little bit of investigating I've done since the accident. I've always been one who doesn't hear a lot, but I've been able to hear a lot more voices since I did that.
That's probably something I need to do.
Well, come on over here, honey.
You know, to become a little more sensitive.
You know, and a lot of the viewers are going to be like, okay, what is this guy talking about? You know, the lessons that Catherine never really meant to teach me, you know, being around, you know, people that are intuitive and people that have that gift, you know, you guys tend to, you know, be an example for certain individuals. And I myself, as an investigator, I've always asked myself, you know, what is it that Catherine has that I don't have? And we actually had the opportunity to actually be at a paranormal convention in Manteca County. And where I wasn't even part of the conversation, it was just you and Rebecca Mendoza. You guys were, you know, discussing, you know, different individuals and what their aura was. And I'm sitting over here, I'm like, in my head, I'm trying to look, I'm trying to sense the aura. And I was like, green, blue,
right,
orange.
Once somebody explains how to do it, it's like, oh, okay.
And, you know, we got to experience that. I've been doing that since I was a kid. And I talked to Catherine, and it's nice, you know, being of this mind, and you get together and kind of brainstorm. And remember that when we were at that one event?
Mm-hmm. And well, we do it at a lot of events.
We've right, but the one at the surfing event when we first met.
Oh, that's right.
And a guy had passed away, and this was a special event in honor of him. And Catherine and I had been talking about it, and I started to explain. I'm like, okay, you see the outer light? And, okay, see the colors? And it was like, it's like a switch goes on. And she's like, yeah, I do.
It was the funniest part was I wasn't part of this conversation or this lesson that was being, you know, that was being taking place. And I'm sitting there in my head, I'm like, orange, red. Or, no, actually it wasn't red, it was orange, blue, green. And I would hear you guys actually, you know, call out.
The same colors you were
the
seeing.
The same colors. And for those that don't know, I mean, is there a way for people to actually try to practice this or see if they have that ability? Because I know not every person has that ability.
This is how I started when I was a kid. I would stand in front of a mirror and I would start to this may sound crazy, but I would stand in front of a mirror and I would concentrate on putting all of, condensing all my focus into the mirror. And I would try to get to where I felt I was actually the mirror looking out at myself. And really what I was doing was meditating and not realizing it. And I would get in a meditated state staring into the mirror, but I would look at myself and being very relaxed, I could start to see a yellow aura, and that's the color of relaxation, penetrating from me. And I'd startle myself and it would go away, and then I'd get relaxed again and I could see it. So I started to look at other people to see if I could get in this almost meditated, relaxed stage to where I could see it. And like I said, it's like a switch goes on, and you're able to just put your mind there at any point in time after you practice this, and you're able to just see it. And I think it's just getting to a concentrated point.
And I like to practice by just being in a large room, looking across the room at maybe one person, and you kind of just space, basically. You don't look directly at them. You kind of use your peripheral vision, and you'll start to see a color around the shape of their body. And 9 times out of 10, if 2 people do it looking at the same person across the room, they're going to see the same colors.
Exactly. What is your belief on, I've seen a couple of little booths here and there at different conventions where they have a person sitting there and it's computer, the computer actually brings out the color of your aura. How precise are these devices?
I have no idea on that one.
Will you vouch for them?
No.
She has no idea. Going back to some of the cases that you've probably worked on, Catherine, where you go into maybe a homeowner's, place of, where they live. Mm-hmm. I know you can't talk about specifics, but what are some of the situations in general that you've seen people involve themselves in where they kind of invite? And I'm not talking about people who are doing investigating. Right. I'm just talking about people who are doing
living their life
or doing things that they shouldn't necessarily be involving themselves in that invite this type of energy in.
Sometimes they move into a house where this activity is already occurring. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they've used a Ouija board or done other practices that have invited non-human entities in. Some of these entities were there before the house was built there. Some are older than Christianity. Mm. I don't know how I know, but I can tell the difference whether it's human or non-human. It's just a feeling that I get. I can't really explain it.
And with that being said, I know, correct me if I'm wrong, but your theory and, how to describe entities or how the classifications of them, I've heard you say they're human, non-human, and elementals.
Well, yeah, elementals are like animals, fairies, they're all that category of spiritual creature.
So they're not,
they can be devilish and some of them can be kind of bad, but they're not like full on demonic entities.
Okay.
And it can still make you feel uncomfortable too and a little startled with that type of spirit as well.
Well, yeah, they could be ornery.
Now,
don't like them.
But what if there's a case in where it's a malevolent spirit as opposed to just being a non-human spirit?
Yeah, once you find out once you're sensing that it's not something that's not human, what do you do then?
Usually the other people on my team will also sense the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then there's a process that we go through to get the spirit to leave.
Okay. Now, does this depend on the faith of the people involved?
Yeah, and it also depends on what entity it is also, like what level it is, if it's a fallen angel or if it's another demonic entity that's older than that.
I work a lot with Catherine, but when it comes to these certain cases, I pull back and don't go on them when they're a high level, because and the only reason why I don't is because I have not been practicing my Catholic faith as religiously mm-hmm. as I should. And I think for me personally, without that in place, I don't feel that it's something that I should be doing.
Or that you're fully equipped, maybe? Is correct. That what you're saying?
And yeah. it's really rare. Mm-hmm. It's really rare to really come across something like that, but it does happen. And there's things we do to try to get the spirit out of the house, get rid of it somehow. I can't really get into that. I do the Catholic stuff for my group. There's other people that do other aspects of religion within the group.
Now, what do you do when the homeowner or the persons involved have no faith or no are atheist or have no Christian faith type beliefs?
It just depends on what the spirit is, what we're dealing with, and we'll treat it accordingly to what it is.
Okay. What is, I guess, the most challenging situation that you've come across in dealing with clients?
I think just something that we did together, and it wasn't an intense case. What was intense were the people. And we walked in to the house not knowing that they had pit bulls. Now, we had a pit bull growing up, and I think that they are beautiful animals, but sometimes unpredictable. I know with our own pet growing up, he was unpredictable. And we walked into the house, and they had a couple of pit bulls, and the pit bulls started growling at us. And it made me feel very uncomfortable. But the people that lived in this home, they thought that the pit bull was being taken over.
Okay.
And also, the mother, had teenagers and a young adult with a young child living with them. And the mother was not, we just think that she probably needed to go to the doctor and have a physical. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I don't think she really agreed with. And for me, that's more of a difficult case when you find clients that won't take the relevant steps to move forward in a situation like this.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, there's situations where you'll ask them to get a medical report on their condition mentally and physically, and they refuse to do it.
And I mean, I know there's some individuals actually, you know, try to see things in, you know, in other people's perspective, mm-hmm. for instance, and actually question themselves and say, am I really going crazy? I mean, because that's actually something that actually happened to me, and where my grandfather visited me before he passed away, you know, and I decided to share with some friends. I figured, you know, they're my friends, I'm going to share with them, and they turned around and said, you're crazy. So then that's when I would sit at home.
And you quit talking about it.
No, well, of course, I mean, because, you know, I was more reserved, but I would sit at home and actually sit there and contemplate, was I hallucinating? You know, it was on Christmas Eve when this actually happened. I was like, I mm-hmm. drank one beer. I was like, and did my research. It's impossible for someone to just to hallucinate or with alcohol, with one beer, you know, mm-hmm. and that's when I started going out to local cemeteries to try to capture EVPs, you know, validate my own claims. And it wasn't until my grandmother, actually, you know, I waited, you know, enough time for, you know, her wounds to heal. And I asked her, this is what happened to me. And she broke down crying to me. And she says, I've seen your grandfather in my home many different times. And she had countless of the stories that validated my experiences. And I know we were both connected at that moment, because we were both feeling, you know, that we're not losing it or whatnot.
Right. The unspoken thing between you and your grandmother.
Right. And then, so with that being said, you know, there's people that you guys do ask for diagnosis from a doctor, see if they're mentally ill or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Who sets these rules of, oh, I'm a psychic medium? Nobody does, right?
Right.
And I mean, I know there's a
nobody's an expert.
Right. And I know there's a lot of mediums out there and people that brand themselves as psychics. And
right.
I know that the people that actually have this ability, they're able to tell who's who and, you know, who has what.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I just wish you guys would actually release this information. I don't know, for some reason people think that it's a competition when it should be, you know, more like teamwork and actually say, well, you have it, you have it, you have it.
Right. It's hard, you know, people say they're psychic. You have to take them at their word at it and then go by their work, you know, what you see them do and their predictions and their.
I myself don't talk very much about my abilities and what I do, because I use it as a tool for myself when I investigate, as just gathering information. And I prefer to work as a team with everybody, but I'm not, I don't do this to go in there and just do it for me and have it about me. I do it for other reasons. And I have to admit, though, when I first started doing this about 5 years ago, I would get so excited and enthusiastic about using different equipment and getting your K2 meter to go off, gathering EVPs. And it is exciting. It is. But as I've evolved over the years, and I've only been doing this 5 years, I realize now that there's a much bigger picture out there, and we are dealing with individuals who perhaps are stuck, who don't even know why they're stuck here. Perhaps they want to move on, but they have fears that are holding them back. And I think what we need to do is really respect the spirits that are here and see, you know what, can we help you? We have to stop making this about our K2 meters and the excitement of it. And I have to admit, I'm the first one to say, I love it when I get my equipment to work. But I have to remove myself out of this and realize I have a responsibility here. And if I can help a spirit cross over, then you know what, that's what this is all about.
Okay.
And with the, you know, crossing over topic, I know in the beginning of this podcast, Catherine said, you know, it's not okay for people to invite an entity or a spirit to actually touch you and actually provoke it. You know, if you I describe it as provoking because you're actually calling it upon you so you can touch you.
Well, I don't think it's a good idea. I know people do it.
And I mean, I'm not contradicting you. I'm just bringing an example because I've actually investigated with you guys when we're sitting there and we're all holding hands and we're praying. Mm-hmm. And you feel spirit come and join in, actually hold on to my arm or whatnot. And when stuff like that happens, I mean, I know there's some exceptions to what could actually happen or whatnot, you know, and with attachments being said, my home, you know, is full of a lot of faith and a lot of love. But for some reason, I have been dealing with attachments that stay in my room. And, you know, at first, have an experience by myself and just brush it off. And it wasn't until my brother Sergio started actually to, you know, notice it. And he's like, hey, you're in San Pedro. I heard you coughing in your room. Mm. You're in New York. I actually heard footsteps in your room. And I think it's when another person validates and actually experiences it, you know, is when you actually realize, hey, well, is it really bad what's in there? Or is it something that's good? Or if it's something that, you know, wants to be your friend? Or how are you able to actually determine whether or not, what if they were my spirit guides or whatnot?
I don't think it's, your spirit guide would be with you. It wouldn't be waiting in your bedroom while you're in your New York.
The last home that I lived in for 8 years, we had spirits in it. And the little kids who would come over would say, oh, there's a grandpa. And I believe it was probably the person that lived in there before. And Catherine, we would talk like, well, maybe we should get rid of these spirits here. And it was hard for me because I felt they were a part of the house. And they didn't really do anything other than show themselves so you could hear them sometimes. But I have a different opinion now after doing this for a while. I don't think really I should have spirits in my home. And I think that if they're hanging out, then you know what, we need to find a way for them to have peace, to move forward.
Or why do they feel comfortable being around you? You know what I mean? Why would they want to?
I think because they know we can sense them and hear them. Mm-hmm. Not everybody can. Like there was this one spirit in Marlo's house that she used to call the target man. And sometimes I have this weird phenomena happen, and I've never even heard of this thing happening, but I'll be on an investigation, and it's probably happened like a half a dozen times, so it hasn't happened a lot with me, but I will look at somebody, one of the other investigators, and all of a sudden they'll start morphing into a different person. It might go from male to female, might go from fat to thin, might go from long hair to short hair, full body transformation completely. And I'll just be like, kind of, whenever this happens, I've never gotten a photo because I trip out so much when it happens that I don't think to take a picture. I don't know if a picture would even show up. But then come to find out, that looks like one of the people that used to live in that house or that building or whatever. Huh. And when I was at Marlo's house one night, I was walking in the bedroom, and I see this man who looks like he's from the 1920s because he's got that parted, slicked down hair. Uh-huh. And he's got one of those high collar, tight suits on, but he's all black, you know? And I'm like looking at him like, what is that? Is that on the wall? And I'm looking behind me, and I'm thinking, she's got this like target thing, and she had never
a target practice that you do for shooting.
It looked like a target practice, but it was more distinct where it had this like wavy parted hair and such. So anyway, after I don't know how many seconds, I finally realize I'm looking in the mirror and I'm seeing myself. And then she says, "That's Target Man. You're seeing Target Man." And it's this guy who lived in the area. I don't think he lived in her house because I think he's from the 1920s.
Okay.
I always have, or when I was younger, I don't feel it at this home now, but like a depot where they come through, just passing through.
Yeah, I think he's just there occasionally.
What was his name again? The Hider?
Target Man, because he looked like a, at a shooting range, the target.
And that's funny because most of the people that I actually work with, you know, when they're dealing with a case like this, they actually, AKA their ghost or their spirit that actually roams around their home. You know, I've been at a friend's house and then, oh, it's Peeker, because they always see him peeking in.
Uh-huh.
And you guys have a target man.
They have little nicknames.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Now, one of the things that I want our listeners to be able to take away from this podcast is some practicals that they can look for or watch out for when they're doing you know, different things, make it be EVPs. A couple of questions that I had about doing EVPs. I hear, or I've heard this said, that you should not do EVPs in your home or do ITC. What are your thoughts on that, and why or why not?
Well, I always say not to, but I'll be honest, I have in the past. And it's just been when there's stuff going on, and I'll just pull out my recorder, and every time I do get an EVP. And for me, it just helps to excuse the spirit and help them move forward. And I'll just, get the EVP and then direct them, speak to them directly, and help move them forward.
Okay. Catherine, your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are don't do EVPs in your own home, period.
Okay. Why?
Because it's kind of along the same lines as using a Ouija board. You don't know really what you're asking for, who's going to come forward, if they are who you think they are. And there seems to be something to the homeowner inviting the spirit in.
Okay.
As opposed to an investigator going to their house, doing an investigation. They don't have the authority to invite that spirit.
So this is more like a formal invitation almost to whatever is there.
To me, that's what it seems like. There's some kind of rules that a lot of investigators hear talking about, the rules.
Mm-hmm.
There's something to that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Okay. And I think you brought up a very valid point, authority. And once again, like she says, we don't have authority, but you do in your own home. You have the authority. If you have a spirit that you don't want in your home, you have the authority to speak to that spirit and tell them they do not have your permission. and it's the intent mm-hmm. that you say it to be in this home. And I'm going to ask you to leave. And there's been times when I have said those words, and I said, if you don't leave on your own accord, then I will call a priest, and I will have you taken out of here.
Mm-hmm.
These are the rules. This is my house. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the intent when addressing a spirit. You do have the authority to direct them out.
Okay. Now, this is...
I think that works most of the time.
Uh-huh.
I would say 99% of the time. But there is a time where you need outside help.
Okay. Now, this question, probably Romero can answer it, regarding EVPs. I've only been on a few actual investigations, and I've heard at the end of the EVP session or ITC session to make sure that, you know, make sure you close the session. What does that mean, and how important is that, and what does that do?
You know, in theory, I mean, there's different practices of how people conduct the session. It's like communicating with somebody. You just don't hang up on them without saying bye or saying, oh, well, it's nice talking to you. You know, and with that being said, I mean, it's all based around the ethic, you know, and the belief of respect. Mm-hmm. You know, because if you don't have the respect, then they're not going to respect you. And I see them as an authority to me, because I've actually had experiences where they haunt me in my dreams. And I'm like, I'll wake up, and I know I'm being haunted from an attachment that actually followed me home from a location. And I know I don't have any control over it. And I've actually even said, I'm going to bring a priest here. And after burning certain candles, try to do different practices to try to get these spirits out. I actually, one day I said, I'm going to call a priest to come out here and get you out. And, you know, I shared it to a couple of friends, and I was tugged out of my bed. You know, they actually grabbed me from my bed and pulled me halfway off the mattress, and provoking them. I just figured, well, whatever it is, it wants to communicate with me.
Yeah, if you're going to go that route, don't tell them first.
You know, and as long as you have that respect, because, I mean, of course, when I said, I'm going to bring a priest here, and I said it, you know, just, you know, provoking and just being a little threatening and, you know, let me know, you know, who the authority was. And, you know, I know they can harm you in many different ways. It's not a physical fight where you can block yourself. I know they can hurt you spiritually, you know.
Yeah, it just makes sense to be polite.
Courtesy,
you know.
I'm only speaking from an experience I had when I was about 16 with a spirit in my home, and it wasn't a good spirit. It's actually taught me to sense when something is coming on that is something you don't want to mess with, and I would not go back into my bedroom for a week. The first night I slept with my parents, and then from that point on, I slept in my brother's room. They would have to go and get clothes out of my bedroom. And mind you, I was 16 years old, and it did scare me. And finally, my mother, she had a talk with me, and she says, enough is enough. You need to go back in. You need to claim your bedroom, and you need to tell the spirit, you know, scream at it if you have to, you know, this is your room. And I did, and I said, in the name of Jesus Christ, our Lord, I command you to leave my room and never to return again. And I don't know if that was more for me, for the spirit. I didn't have a problem with it again, but it taught me a lesson to be strong-minded, as I said in the beginning of this, be stronger than the spirit, be the authority. You know, everything in life has a pecking order. You know, you I think, need to go in there and establish who you are and what order you're in. And that's something that I learned at a young age. And that's just what personally works for me. I don't know if that would work for everybody, but I'm just putting it out there.
Okay. Now, as far as playing EVPs back, right? Some people say don't play them back on your way to your car or in your vehicle. Does the EVP that maybe you captured attract, have the potential to attract other spirits who are in the area?
I don't know on that one. I like to do EVP sessions where I do like a 3-minute short burst, as they call it, and see what results I get at the location.
Mm-hmm.
So I can know that I'm on the right track as far as questions to ask. It helps. I like to do that. Some people just record and then listen when they get home.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a problem with it. That doesn't mean I couldn't sometime, I suppose, you know. But what do you think, Marla?
I agree. I do exactly what Catherine said. There's been times when we've been driving home long distance, and we'll listen to our EVPs, and I've never had a problem with it. One thing, however, I have one laptop that I do only use for EVPs. I don't download them on any of my other laptops because I've found that I've had situations in the past where my computer started to do things it really should not do. And this is just the one computer that I have all my EVPs on. And what happened, I'll tell you briefly, I was sending out an email and it was loaded with all these EVPs and it started to, in spell check, it started to bring up different names that had nothing to do with the word I was spell checking, and it brought up messages because the words in order spelled out somebody who arrived at my house earlier and who I was talking about, put that person's name, and all these names and what this sentence, by the time it was done, had nothing to do with the word I was trying to spell check. So I decided, you know what, I don't want to mess up my other equipment, so I just put my EVPs on this one laptop, and I don't use it for anything else.
Now myself, you know, I've gone over, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours, countless hours of EVP, you know, playbacks and analysis, and to answer Ernie's question, there's times when I actually sit there in my room, and I'm, you know, listening to an audio file, and you sense energy raise, you know, and you start seeing shadow figures, or through the you know, my laptop, I'll see a shadow run behind me. And, you know, once it comes to a certain, you know, time around at night, then, you know, I don't get creeped out. I just know mm-hmm. when enough is enough.
So at least in your experience, playing back EVPs in some instances has increased activity or the what you're sensing around you.
Going back with that story, you know, I know everybody has heard the story as a child, where, you know, parents always, you know, try to scare you or teach you a lesson, God's always watching or someone's always watching you. And I feel that, you know, as an investigator, you know, you go out and expose yourself to this so they tend to know who you are and, you know, they're actually out there. You know, once they know you're listening out for them, they're going to do whatever they could to actually get their message across.
Well, one of my best EVPs I ever recorded, Class AA+, was it said those exact words, watching over you.
Yeah, I think you had mentioned that to me a while back about that. Now, really quickly, Catherine, if you're going into an investigation where it could be something that is malevolent or non-human, what are some obvious things that you can look for? Maybe somebody who's not sensitive that goes in is not going to be able to physically or you know spiritually sense something. But what are some physical?
Well, first of all, on literally any investigation, you could be walking into something like that. Mm-hmm. So you need to keep that in mind at all times. It's super rare, hardly ever happens, but it's possible.
Okay.
But we're talking like large pieces of furniture moving,
mm-hmm.
Growling, hissing, crazy stuff. Oh, and sulfur smell. Yeah, a lot of times there's a sulfur smell or just kind of a really, really horrid odor. Religious objects being moved in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty clear.
Okay.
And it's extremely rare.
Okay. Now, I can't ask you to speak on other religions, but for yourself, for our Catholic listeners, what are some of the things that you do or you recommend to our Catholic listeners that are maybe investigating or want to beef up, I guess, their protection when they're getting involved in this stuff?
Well, I would pray before I go. I would think about putting up that wall of energy around myself going into the building. Keeping it up, carry your rosary, holy water, whatever it is that, you know, you have. You can go get holy water at any Catholic church. It's always there at the back of the church. And then when you leave, I always bless myself before I go into the location and when I leave a location. If it's a especially kind of hairy one, I'll bless the car. I'll make sure everybody, I bless everybody, whether they want to get blessed or not. Some people use sage, and that works really well for people that have that belief system. So it's just what gives you your strength.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's the conviction, too. You know, I did speak to a priest once about exorcisms, and I says, well, why does it work for a priest? And he says it's a conviction and belief. They do it with such conviction, and it's something that's been passed down through the church and such a strong belief in that I really believe that that's why it works.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Any closing thoughts or anything that you want
to... I have a lot of thoughts on behalf of all the viewers. You know, I know people may listen to me and say, well, Romero is lucky that he's got an opportunity to actually investigate with Marlo and see Catherine's work. If someone wanted to actually get a reading from Catherine Wilson, where can they get a hold of you?
You could go to my website, which is Psychic Catherine, KATHRYN. com, or you can email me at CatherineWilson@cox.net.
And if someone wanted to date Marlo, how can we get a hold of you?
You can find me on Facebook, Marlo Scott.
Marlo Scott, and I think both of you are likes on the Haunted Orange Facebook page.
Yes, we are.
You are? Okay.
Yes, we like Haunted Orange.
The other thing
I like it a lot.
I want to mention to our listeners is that Marlo and Catherine are now officially members of our group, Haunted Orange County, and we're very honored and pleased to have them working side by side with us. And if you want the opportunity to be able to actually investigate with them or interact with them, all you have to do is attend one of our events and you'll get to meet them in person. And
we love to work with people that are enthusiasts that have never been on an investigation and would like to go and see for themselves, see an EVP, hear one in real time. It's really exciting. It's quite a charge. And see what you can pick up. We work with you. We help you tune in to your psychic ability. We give you instruction if you need it. We just love working with new people and bringing you in if you're interested, because we're so enthusiastic about it ourselves.
And I have to say really quick that we had the investigation a couple of weeks ago in Santa Ana, the one that we had a couple different buildings there, and Catherine and Marlo were leading a group, and my family, a nice chunk of my family was involved in their portion of the investigation, and they had some amazing evidence that was brought forth, I think, because of the way you guys work so well together and the energy that you produce. And I'll tell you, I'm not being dramatic, but that was a life-changing evening for them.
Really?
Because to be able to actually experience something, you know, they see it on TV all the time, they hear people talk about it, but
it's nothing like being there and experiencing it yourself.
To actually experience it, you know, on their own, you know, there, it really made them, you know, have a whole different level of respect for it, you know. What I mean?
That makes me feel so good. I am so passionate about it, and Catherine as well, and I think we just enjoy what we do so much that it makes it a real pleasure to do these investigations.
Yeah, so that was definitely a great event, and we thank you guys for joining us on that one.
Thank you.
So we're going to have a lot of other... Romero's kind of heading up all of the investigations that we're having, and he's coming up with some great locations that have not been investigated yet, which is always great because you hear the same locations being investigated over and over again, and Romero has access to quite a few different locations that we're going to be featuring on our investigations that a lot of people haven't had the chance to investigate yet. And so again, you know, if you want a chance to investigate with Marlo and Catherine, check out our website, hauntedorange.com, and you'll see
you'll see all the great things that we have coming up. Anything else you want to say, Romero?
Like every podcast, you know, I know some DVDs have what they call Easter eggs. So the next Club 33 dinner that we have, there will be a coupon code, and it's Catherine 007. Catherine 007.
Great. Well, for Ernie Alonzo and Romero Ramirez of Haunted Orange County, we want to thank you for joining us this evening. Hopefully you enjoyed our podcast, and please stay tuned for more podcasts. We do these on a monthly basis, and we thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
It's been a pleasure.
And I vouch for both Catherine and Marlo, and I would actually give you back your money, you know, double your money, guarantee, you know, that their work is legit. And if the viewers, you know, the listeners out there are actually viewers, listeners, if they have a location that they might, you know, may have as a referral, you know, please, you know, we would love to take on those locations.
Definitely.
And show, you know, you guys what their abilities are all about.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're out there to help. So if you'd like to contact Haunted Orange, we'd be glad to help you at your home or office, wherever you're having an issue.
Mm-hmm. You can find them either on Catherine's website, or you can also go to Haunted Orange, and we'll have links to their contacts as well. So thank you again, and good night.